Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next couple hours, we're going to be here talking about car repair issues, car repair problems. What about this? What about that? And the easiest way to get on is just give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I've got my son, Alan, here. He runs our diesel division and performance side. And I would imagine that you get lots of calls about Chevy, Dodge, and Fords.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
and most of those perhaps from your father, because they're calling me and they're asking me questions.
Yep. Yeah, I get a lot from a lot of questions, actually.
Okay, so we'll open it up to that, too, as well. If you have a Dodge, if you have a Chevy with a Duramax, or if you have a Ford, and no matter what motor you've got, give us the symptoms and we'll do our best to guide you. We're not going to be able to fix your car over the air, but it's probably something that we've seen and fixed before.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of know what the menu is because, well, like you've got Don's truck in here right now,
mm-hmm.
and there's oil leaks, and I think there were some turbo lines on the top of the motor. It's a Ford.
Yeah, high-pressure oil pump, yep.
Okay, and it's a 7.3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's real excited. You know, he just had COVID, and he was in the hospital.
Yep.
And I talked to him two or three times in the last couple of days, and he's doing really well. And he's excited to get his truck back. And then we talked the other day about some other things that he wanted us to look at and
yep.
stuff like that. So if you have a diesel truck and you got a problem, then it doesn't cost you anything. 602-508-0960. Let's go to the phones. And we've got David. David, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. Thank you for asking.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. I don't have anything for you to fix, but I'm hoping to avoid a future problem.
Okay.
I am kind of taken with the Jeep Rubicon, but I've heard that certain years had serious computer issues, and I'm wondering what range of years should I look for to get a solid vehicle for maybe the $25,000 to $30,000 range, and which any particular motor I should look for or what. That
okay.
would be appreciated.
Okay, we can do that. I suppose you've got some Rubicons in your fleet.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm not... you're talking about the Wrangler Rubicon, I'm assuming, correct?
Correct, yes.
I'm not familiar with computer issues. I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to on that. We don't see a lot
of. I've heard that for about 4 years up to about 2015 or so, some of the V8s had a tendency to just quit running while you're running down the freeway and no particular reason. And
well, they don't come with V8s though. The Rubicons.
Yeah, okay, well, that's yeah. news to me. Okay, maybe whoever I was talking to misunderstood my question.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I think they did. Because the Rubicons, now, I digress, because they did build, in 2021, they built a special edition 392 Hemi for the Jeeps. But I'm pretty certain that's not what you're referring to. There are also, what's the word I'm looking for? Engine swaps that we've done numerous, where you do put the V8s or the Hemis into the Jeeps. I don't know if that's what he was referring to, but as far as the Rubicon, they're good rigs. I'd buy one in a second. The only reason I don't buy one is because I would spend $1 million on it, because every single accessory on the planet is available for those things, and I can't control myself. So,
and he needs to control himself. I have a comment for you, David. Every day of my life, I hear what you've said. Well, I've been told this, and I've been told that, and the thing dies when it's running down the freeway and stuff like that. Here's the problem with that. The problem is that so many times a guy will get on the internet, and he'll start spouting off on what he did, what he has, and then everybody starts talking about it, and then whatever they said all of a sudden becomes God's word. And then really,
right.
in reality,
been the problem.
Well, the problem turns out to be a crankshaft sensor or a fuel pump problem. And you say to him, hey, did you check fuel pump? Yeah, I did. And then you say, okay, well, what kind of pressure did you have? And then he starts stumbling around, because if he knew and he did check his pressure, he'd know that that was probably 10, 12, 14 pounds. But he doesn't know the answer because he didn't check the pressure. So we see that all the time. My best advice to you is we like Rubicons. If you're going to buy one, just have somebody who works on them do a used car checkover. That's at our shop. It's about $125, something like
150
that. $150. And we give you a list of stuff that you can negotiate with. It's the same way. There's lots of shops throughout the valley that do that. But that used car checkover is money in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got guys that go, what's the big rock crawling thing that they go to up in Utah or Montana?
Yeah, Moab, Rubicon. Yeah, we do all of that stuff and build Jeeps for those all the time. And
there was a time when Alan was up there, and he was with a bunch of guys at the big Rubicon rally?
Rubicon, yeah.
And then they were dumping the motorhome black water tank, and the hose got away from them. So they're all out there with brooms and their old T-shirts trying to move that black water back towards the drain. And I guess it was kind of comical, but... you have to be aware of that. Don't let anybody kick your hose out when you're not looking. All right?
Yeah, there's no Rubicon years that I would be I'd be afraid of.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad I called.
No problem.
All right. And that means a lot. Give me the year of the spread that you do work on. What
usually the JKs. I don't know exactly what year that started, 08, I think. So anything 08 up.
Okay, so in the last 10, 12 years,
yeah.
No problem.
Yeah,
okay.
No. All right. I don't see many issues.
And we don't see the motors blown up, but what we do see is we see suspension damage because they probably went into place and twisted it up a little tighter than they should have, stuff like that. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Let me tell you about a good shop in town, Blackwell Automotive, up at 40th and Greenway. Tom does family cars, vans, does motor homes, does pickup trucks, does Jeeps, does all that stuff, but he also has a vintage car department. And so if you have an old car and you want to switch the air conditioning from the, from 12 to something else, and actually most of the time we go back to 12. So nevertheless, Tom can do all that kind of stuff. He's been around a very long time. He's no spring chicken. He wasn't born yesterday. And he knows right from wrong, and he has a really nice shop. So if you're up in that northeast Scottsdale area, the only guy I can recommend is Blackwell Automotive. There's lots of shops up there. But for me to recommend him, you have to have virtually a spotless record. You have to be around a long time. You have to have ASE certified technicians. And under the best of the conditions, the guy that runs the shop is an ASE certified technician. And under really good condition, he's a master tech. And that means a lot. So it's a historical thing, and reviews are nice. But in reality, it's important to me that the shop have the capabilities to do the work that they say they are. And we've got another caller. Go ahead.
Say hello to Jack.
Jack, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Hey, I've got a problem with a 2000 F-150. It's a V6. My son was driving it the other day up a long hill, and he felt something in the engine. Then it started running a little rough. It lacks power. It runs a little bit rough at idle. So we took it into a shop. It's got 240,000 on it. I know that's a lot for a Ford, but that's a different matter.
We're not going to tease you. We'll go ahead.
Yeah. Probably shouldn't respond to that one. So we took it into a shop, and they say, so it's throwing codes on three cylinders misfire, I think. The shop says, well, you need to replace all your fuel injectors. The problem is 6 months ago we had all the fuel injectors replaced. So I'm really having a hard time thinking all of a sudden three fuel injectors went bad on us. So do you have any ideas on what we can do or what's the next step?
This isn't tough. I can tell you that now, and just follow me through on this. We see cars come in and they've got, 4, 6, 8 new fuel injectors on them. And we see mass airflow sensors on them, and we see this and we see that. We see all kinds of new stuff, spark plugs and ignition coils, all kinds of stuff. And we know somebody's chasing a problem, but what they're doing is they're dancing around. When you have a fuel issue, the very first thing you have to do is you have to take the old filter off and blow through it and then blow through a new one. And to make sure that it's okay or not okay. Then the second thing you do is you have to run a
filter.
The fuel filter.
Oh, the fuel filter.
Yeah. And if you take it off and you put it to your lips and you blow through it and it's like somebody's got their thumb over the other side, then the thing's plugged up. But if you have a new one next to it and you blow through it and it's like blowing through a straw. Okay? So the difference between a Louis Armstrong trumpet where his cheeks puff out a mile and blowing through a straw, that's the difference. The second thing is you run a fuel pressure test on it to make sure that it has the appropriate fuel pressure, which would then, if it doesn't, then the engine's going to starve for fuel and it's going to have fuel-related issues. But in reality, it's either the pump that's bad or the filter that's bad. This isn't a tough one. And we don't fix problems based on the codes, but the codes will typically point us in the right direction. For instance, if you had an O2 sensor code there that said lean, lean, and you had a delivery problem, and you had a I can't climb to Flagstaff because it runs real bad, 1 and 1 equals 2. And so that points to a fuel delivery problem. So this is what makes me so mad, because you should have said to him, so let me get this straight. I'm going to pay you a whole bunch of money to replace the fuel injectors, and you're going to guarantee that my truck is going to run fine, and it's going to be fine, and the problem that I brought it in here for, you're going to take care of. Because I want to tell you something. Nothing sets my butt on fire more, and it doesn't happen around my shop, where somebody comes in and says, well, the code says it's running lean, so let's put a set of injectors in it. That technician's gone that very minute. That's not what it's all about. You have to be smarter than that.
Yeah, and the other thing is they always want to replace an O2 sensor, too.
Yeah.
Well, let me explain the O2 sensor real quick to you. The O2 sensor talks about voltage, okay? And low is lean and high is rich. So I want you to pretend that the O2 sensor can talk 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Are you with me? That's the O2 sensor range.
Yep.
If it's running lean, it's down at 1. And if it's running 10, it's really rich. Now, let me ask you a question. Okay. If you and I plugged in our scanner, not our code reader, but our scanner, we're going to talk to the computer, and we create a vacuum leak, we should see 1. Yes? Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And then if we put our hand over the top of the intake and cut off the air, or if we start spraying carb cleaner or spraying some fuel in the air intake, then it'll go to 10. That's how easy it is to test a fuel, an O2 sensor. You got to test it to see if it can see lean and rich. And there's no reason to guess, because it's so damn easy to test.
So I usually tell my customers when people say that about O2s is, to me, the O2s are the tattletales.
They are.
You know, they are the reporters. Do we replace them from time to time? Absolutely. No, I mean, no question about it. But that's usually a, you know, low voltage, no response, it's something like that. But they're just the tattletales. They're just the reporter. They just report what they're seeing. So there's something upstream, downstream, whatever.
Especially if it's a rich code, because a rich code is the top end of the voltage spectrum. So the O2 sensor is alive because it can see that big voltage, and it's talking that big voltage. So Alan's right. It's really a matter. It doesn't take much, but it does take $1,000 or $2,000 worth of equipment to test an O2 sensor. But the test from start to finish might be 10 minutes.
I would tell that shop, I would say, you know, it doesn't make sense. All of a sudden, 6 injectors go bad. I mean, it's just, that sounds ridiculous.
Well, and then if you had injectors that went bad, that means that he's lost fuel spray, and they're not spraying,
right,
and they're plugged up, or they're dirty, or they're bad.
Right.
There should be drivability problems that go along with that.
Absolutely.
And this truck, if he's got all the injectors bad, this thing shouldn't go more than 25 miles an hour. We'd be done. And if it was running rich, it would be puffing black smoke out the back like a diesel.
Or if it wouldn't run at all.
Or it wouldn't run at all. Yeah, so those are the kinds of things. You just need somebody else. What part of town are you in right now?
Well, I'm actually in New Mexico.
Oh, okay. Well, let me tell you. I'll tell you something.
I'm near Santa Fe.
Okay, this is what you do. Don't pass this on to anybody else, okay? Call a couple of the auto parts stores in your area that have been around a long time and get a hold of the old gray-haired guy and say to him, I'm new to the area. I want to know the shop that pays their bills. I want to know the shop that doesn't order 5 parts and return 4 of them. I want to shop with the old gray-haired guy that's been around the block that knows how to diagnose cars. Who is that? And the old guy at the parts counter, the Napa store, the CarQuest, or the AutoZone, he'll know and he'll tell you.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. All right. Sounds like you're pointing me towards fuel delivery, because I think you agree with me. It's pretty unlikely I've got 3 or more bad injectors that happen at the same time.
Well,
right?
Like I said, if they were bad and they weren't spraying, it wouldn't have much power. And if it was bad because they're stuck open, you'd have a lot of black smoke. So pick your poison. Yeah. And if you don't have either one of them, then I would change shops.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem. Both of us are related to an auto repair shop in Tempe, but this isn't about our shop. It's about helping you out with your cars. It's about helping you what to say, what not to say, and stuff like that with respect to your shop. Speaking of good shops and speaking of good diesel shops, Strictly Diesel's up in North. It's Pinnacle Peak and I-17. We've known Nate for a long time. He's really, really good at diesels. That's why his name of his shop is Strictly Diesel. So if you live up in that area and your General Motors, your Ford, your Dodge is running a little bad, or maybe you want it to run better, Nate's a good guy to do that. Again, Strictly Diesel. And that's exactly what it means. That's what Nate works on, Strictly Diesel. Let's go to the phone. Steve, you've been waiting a while. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
This is actually the third time I've called on the same issue, and you've not let me get the question out because of the way I prefaced it, I believe. I have a 2001 F-250 diesel, and I say it wanders, and I make the analogy like the toe-in is set improperly. That's not the case. I've had it to several shops, good shops, and I still have the wander problem. It just doesn't like to go straight down the highway. So I'm looking for suggestions.
Steve, we already talked about this before. You got shops that are telling you the front end's fine, and yet you're saying their diagnosis is no good or not valid, and you want somebody else to guess, and I'm not in the mood to guess for you. This is something that's on a 1 to 10 scale. This is a 3, and you need to demonstrate the wander first. So the first thing that I would want to do, or about half the shops in town that would want to do, we want you in the truck, and we want you to show us what you're talking about. And so describe the wander.
Well, if you're going down the 101 straight section, you're constantly correcting. Every 3 or 4 seconds, you need to correct.
Okay.
Keep it straight.
What happens if you let go of the steering wheel? Will it just take off on some kind of an angle and just stay on that angle for quite some time?
Right. It will head off at an angle and stay that way until you correct.
Alan, this is what I'm thinking. This either a tie rod end or a ball joint that's really locked up tight, and he's having to constantly do it, or the steering box is adjusted. Somebody adjusted it too tight. What do you think?
I'm going to tell you what I think.
Okay.
I'm going through the exact same thing on my excursion right this second.
Okay.
It is exactly what you're feeling. It is, and for me, it's everything is tight. Everything in the, you know, it's either been replaced or it's tight. We are right now, we are experimenting with the steering box.
Okay.
We loosened it up quarter turn, made it a little bit better. Quarter turn, made it a little bit better. I'm a half a turn right now. Seems to be a little bit better. I know what you're feeling. Adam's feeling kind of the same thing on his excursion. It's I don't know the answer. Everything is tight. There is I'm thinking maybe caster. We may end up having to do some caster sleeves to knock those things back. So it's just kind of more of a you're
constant adjustment.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's just
why couldn't I don't know if I agree with caster, but why couldn't you just dial in a little bit of negative toe? Why? What happens if we have too much toe and we got the dogs? The tires are walking down the roads, pigeon-toed, and so the left front's predominant, then the right front's predominant. The left front's predominant, and back and forth.
Well, it doesn't feel like it's pulling me that way.
I understand.
Yeah, yeah. It's just more of a, to me, I can't tell you right now if there's anything wrong. It feels different than my Dodge, and that's what I'm trying to get used to.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
So I don't know that there is anything wrong.
Well, if we took a little bit of cast to toe out of it, and we pulled them in pigeon-toed by a degree and went and drove it, and the problem went away, then we just need to just fine-tune the alignment.
Yeah.
But if he's got play in the tie rod ends, if he's got play in the steering box,
all bets are off.
And I think I told you last time, Steve, stand outside the truck with the truck running and take the steering wheel in your right hand, reach through the window, and turn the steering wheel left and right 2 or 3 inches and watch the left front tire. And then you're going to have someone else do the steering wheel, and you're going to go over on the right front tire, and you're going to put your hand on the tire, and you're going to watch him turn the steering wheel. We need to make sure that the steering wheel, the minute it moves, one and both of the tires are moving at the same time. because if there's play and it's wandering, then that's causing the problem. But yeah, I can't fix it over the radio. I'm sorry.
It is. It's tough. I'll tell you too. Is it? And the bad thing about a steering box is if it ends up being a steering box, everything now we know is reman.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason typically for us that I like to do those is if they're just leaking or have really bad, because 9 times out of 10 you get a reman steering box, it's worse than yours. If we're just barely, you know, if we're
you're right,
it's, you get a new one in there and it's actually worse than your old one. So you got to kind of take everything with a grain of salt, but I know what you're going through, and
I can't fix it over the radio. I'm sorry. I'm doing the best I can. Lori, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hi. Thanks for answering. Sorry, I'm at work. I have a box for you, too. My car, probably for the last 3 years, you're welcome, has randomly not started, but the radio, the lights and all that will still work. And then, 2 minutes later, it'll start, or the opposite.
Okay. Let's get our terminology right, and it's okay. But when you say it doesn't start, it cranks over normally. It goes...
No, not at all.
Okay, then it doesn't crank. Yes? Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, we have to use the right terminology. So when you hit the key, there's no at all.
Right.
Okay. You can have a bad neutral safety switch on your shifter, so you should wiggle the shifter while you hold the key to the start position and see if that happens. But depending on the mileage, a lot of times we get underneath the car like that and somebody will hold the key to the on position or start position. It doesn't crank. We hit the starter with a hammer and it cranks over, and we're done with the diagnostic. It needs a starter and a solenoid.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. So if you can get somebody, if you know it's going to happen, then you arrange to have somebody get close to the starter with a hammer and make sure the parking brake's on, and then you hit the key and you go to crank and you hold it to crank. And then you say, hit it, honey, hit it. And he hits the starter with the hammer and it cranks over. We're done. You just diagnosed it. It's got a bad starter and bad set of brushes or something like that, a bad solenoid, but it's got a bad starter.
1 minute.
So the correct terminology is no crank, no noise. That means much
crank
to guys like us. Yeah.
No crank, no start. Yeah.
Yeah. No crank, no crank, noise, no start.
Okay. Got it.
As opposed to I hit the key and it goes roo, 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 but it doesn't catch. It doesn't start. So in your case, your drive, you did a good job. You have a no crank condition.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right. Welcome. Yeah. You're welcome, Lori. 602-508-0960 if you're outside the St. Louis. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, you can call 888-960-9696. If you're on iHeartRadio, 888-960-9696. I'm Mark Salem. Alan Salem sitting next to me, and we're going to take your calls when we come back in about 3 minutes. Again, 3 minutes, and we'll take your call. 602 locally, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. 602-508-0960. We're talking about car repair problems, diesels, and alignment issues, and my car doesn't start, and we help you with the vernacular that your car actually isn't cranking over. And so that's going to be a battery cable. That's going to be a battery problem. It's going to be a neutral safety switch. It's going to be a starter solenoid or a starter motor. As opposed to my car goes rrr, 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 but it doesn't catch. That means spark or fuel. So that's kind of the reason why it's really important. You can't... The worst nightmare in an auto shop, our auto shop, is we have somebody come in and they dance the keys onto the counter and they say it won't start and they walk out the door. That's going to cost you money because we're going to have to figure out what the heck you're talking about. And so it's a good idea to just work on it from a little bit more, have more of a conversation at the front counter. Bob, good morning. How can we help you?
Morning, guys. I'd like to ask Alan, does he replace tire pressure monitoring sensors on a preventative basis, or do you just wait till the batteries go dead?
Both. A lot of times customers wait till batteries go dead, yes. if you come to our shop and okay, let's just say it's 2022 and you have a 2013 and you're getting new tires, I may say, hey, I'll save you $100 if you wanna buy 4 TPMS sensors right now. Not a lot. I mean, every once in a while I'll give customers that option, but it's not a bad idea, but it's not something we do every single day.
And in that case, we got the tire off anyway. So
that's my point.
Yeah, the labor is screw the old one off and put a new one on.
Right.
And it's a really kind of a blanket. But give me a range for the TPMS stickers on the sensors on the.
They're usually
as little as
60 to $80.
Okay.
Yeah.
Each.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Each.
So four of them, you could be $320 tied up in 4 TPMS.
Yeah. $320 today, or if you did them later, you'd be $420. You know, to break them down and do them again. So.
And remount them and rebalance.
Yeah.
Them. So, is there anything way to bring them alive? Is there any kind of a trick to somebody says, hey, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, or is that just the battery?
That's just the battery, yeah.
Okay. Does that help you, Bob?
If you had a 2014 and you were getting new tires, would you replace all the sensors?
How many miles has it got on it?
120.
Hey, it's more years than miles. Oh,
I know, but I'm just getting a feeling of how many times they've been talking.
Yeah. I don't know. My tire pressure light's been on for 17 years, so I could honestly care less.
How embarrassing.
No.
How embarrassing.
No. Well, because I always run mine underinflated because I like the ride better.
Okay.
So I don't... You know,
under the parameters the car is looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah. That's a 6-1.
Wait, hold the phone. You run your tires underinflated, and your dad says you should always run up 3 or 4 pounds overinflated.
Well, that's, again, that's...
He's not telling you the truth. Because I don't say we're going 4 pounds over.
No, you don't want to go 4 pounds over. I run mine under, obviously, never when I tow, when I'm always unloaded. I run them at max when I'm loaded all the time. But for me, comfort is more than wearing out tires, is more important to me than wearing out tires. So I like them underinflated. Safe. I don't run them at 15 pounds. Instead of running at 65, I run them at 50. I mean, it's, you know, but,
There's two inflations we're talking about here. We're talking about the one on the door sticker.
Yeah.
And that's to hold the load for that corner of the car.
Yeah.
And then the second one we're talking about is maximum inflation written on the side of the tire.
Right.
Either one of those is an appropriate
yes.
one. Me, on the other hand, unlike him, I'm running mine at maximum inflation because I like the fuel economy. I like all of that. And, of course, you're driving a one-ton Dodge, and the fuel economy is not that perfect. And I'm up to 15 and 16 miles a gallon, so I feel pretty happy. And I think a lot of it has to do with I'm running the tires at maximum inflation.
So, to answer your question, it's 6-1, half dozen the other. If I tell you not to replace them, you'll have one go bad next week. And if I tell you to replace them, they would have been good for another 4 years. So it's like a no-win for me. But it's not a bad idea. It's
and
not
Bob,
a bad idea.
Who's going to do the tires?
Discount.
Okay. I think also you'll find out that because they're so big, and I'm going to tell you up front and everybody else, I work for Discount Tire. I admire them. I think they're a great business model. But I think you'll find your very best price for TPMS there because that's not this giant, what's the word I'm looking for, income stream
yeah.
to them.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal to them.
Yeah, and they're probably using aftermarket sensors. You can spend a couple $100 a sensor if you get an OEM one. We've all switched over. After the OEM ones, we all switch over to an aftermarket universal, so that's not bad. But, it's like I said, it's up to you, man. It's 6-1, half dozen the other.
Anyway, Bob, thank you very much. Thank you for bringing that up. And that's one I don't think I've had in a long time, or if I've ever had, is TPMS. The TPMS is tire pressure monitoring system, and there's a transmitter inside the car that tells the computer on the car what the temperature of the tire is and the temperature and the inflation of the tire. And so when you go down the road and you have your TPMS light come on and it says the right front needs attention, it's typically either overinflated because it got hot or it's underinflated because it's got a nail. So it's the tire pressure monitoring system. That's what TPMS is. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my son, Alan. Between the two of us, we've probably got north of 50, 60 years of car repair experience, and we're here to share that with you. Mike's on the line. We're going to go to him in just a minute, but the lines are open, so there's four lines available, 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, write this down, 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696, and all those 96s is because this is 960 The Patriot in Phoenix. Mike, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Hey, guys. Good morning.
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 Yeah, I have a 08 Lexus, I think 2.0 liter, and it's got about 180,000 miles on it. And the problem I'm having when I'm on the freeway, like if I have my moonroof open and I'm changing lanes and I get on it, I get a rotten egg smell. And it's only when I'm on the freeway and give it a lot of gas.
Okay. But how's your fuel economy?
It's getting about 28 in the city.
Okay. And it only
and
does
I have
it when
no
the
moon... lights or anything.
Okay, and the moonroof is the commonality here. If you open up the sunroof or the moonroof, is when you smell
yeah.
it. Okay.
Right, yeah. So I have the AC on or anything, I don't smell it.
The only thing that we ever, and we actually see it quite frequently, the only thing that we ever see that smells like rotten eggs is battery. So I don't know if maybe you have a battery that's boiling.
You could look at it and see. If it's all wet on the top of it, then your alternator may be
overcharging.
The battery
leaking.
and you're getting, because the wind's going to come through the grill, go underneath the hood, and then the smell's going to go over the windshield, and when you open up the sunroof or the moonroof, then you're going to get that smell. So pop the hood. Now, is your battery inside the car or under the hood?
It's under the hood. Last time I checked, it was dry.
Okay.
Just double check that. Make sure you don't see any corrosion, any, you know, stuff, because 9 times out of 10, rotten egg is battery. It's the sulfur from the battery.
Now, do you have a voltmeter by chance?
Yes.
Okay. We want the battery, when you got the idle up and you got all the air conditioning off and all that kind of stuff, the motor's running and you're holding the throttle a little bit, we want the battery voltage to be somewhere between 13 and 14 volts. So if you turn it on and you're 15, 16, 17 volts, then that's probably your rotten egg smell. We're probably gassing the battery because we've got a problem with a ground, we got a bad ground, or we've got a bad regulator, one or the other, alternator or regulator. Usually they're internal. And it won't be from the exhaust, because catalytic converter will give us the rotten egg smell too, because you're not going to really pick up the exhaust from the moonroof, because the exhaust is way behind you when you're doing down the road at 50 miles an hour. So I think Alan is, let's look at the battery first, and if you have a voltmeter, get the wife, start it up, have her bring the RPMs up to about 1,500 RPM, 1,000, 1,500, hold them, turn on the air conditioning, and then you check the voltage to the battery, and hopefully you're between 13 and 14, and you're not 15, 16, or 17, okay?
Okay, and then it's frying the battery if it's up too high.
Yes, it is.
That's where the smell is coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
All right, good. Okay. Check it out. Thank you.
You betcha.
Yep.
And rotten egg smell. I always make notes because they go, what was that guy's name again? Well, he was Mike.
Yeah.
So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The hardest part of working on cars is the perception that people can go on the internet and go to YouTube and have somebody explain to them how to fix their car. Let me explain why that's not a good idea. First of all, I can't tell you, and Alan, you can chime in whenever you want. We get customers come in all the time, and you lift the hood, and they've got every new thing that you can put underneath the hood is brand new. And we can tell they've been YouTubing. And I can't tell you how many times we have found a bad ground wire, a bad connection, how many times we found a fuel leak or a fuel pressure regulator that's using extra fuel and going into the vacuum system and causing it to run rich, which causes the O2 sensor. And so the guy puts 3, 4, 5 O2 sensors in it, and they must be cheap, so I'm going to go to the dealer and buy theirs, and it's still the same way. Well, the O2 sensor is the messenger, as you said. It tells the computer what the heck's going on in the tailpipe. And so if it's running rich, then the O2 sensor's doing what it's supposed to do. You have to figure that out. And a bad diaphragm in the fuel pressure regulator will cause the engine to just drink gasoline. and the rotten egg smell go along with it. So that kind of conversation is an important one. But there's lots of wives' tales out there where you talk to somebody and he goes, oh, yeah, every single Ford 7.3 has that problem. We don't find that problem. We do find pattern failures. Mm-hmm. But they all have pretty much the same symptoms, and so you can put 1 and 1 equals 2. Give me a pattern failure on your 7.3 Excursion. Anything that you guys fix on a regular basis on the...
Exhaust back pressure sensors.
Okay, and so tell me what the symptoms are.
Mostly it's a check engine light, lack of power.
Okay, so check engine light, and what codes are going to have?
I don't know right off the top of my head what the number is, but it's an exhaust back pressure code.
Okay, and so then you go in, and the exhaust back pressure is supposed to tell the computer what?
I don't know exactly what they do. It's something with the pedestal of the turbo. I don't know exactly how it reads or what it reads.
Okay. Okay. And so it's back pressure is basically as we shove all this turbo air through the intake system and through the engine, it's there's going to be a pressure sensor along the line there to tell us what it is.
Yes.
Okay. And so that's something that we see, and it's easy to diagnose, mm-hmm. and there's no guessing.
No.
And so when they come in and they have been guessing, what are they doing?
Oh.
Could it be a variety of things?
Yeah. Turbos. I mean, there's lots of different things. The 7.3 is really not a great example. More like a 6.0.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, 6.0 would be, you know, there's a million different things that can cause a million different things.
And the 6.0 has been around since the early 2000s.
2003. Yeah.
And we like most everybody else has kind of learned all about the 6.0.
Oh yeah.
Today. If we can just have a conversation with our customer and talk to them and have them give us one of three answers, yes, no, or I don't know, and the guys have a tough time with the I don't know, so they'll guess and say yes or no. The women, on the other hand, will give us the I don't know in a heartbeat. But it's that conversation will get us closer to it. If the shop doesn't have the conversation, then you're already going to spend more diagnostic money than you should have. You can avoid that if you want by doing this. You can write them a note and put the note on the dashboard and say to the technician, and just write the note, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm smelling, and this is how to make it happen. And here's my cell phone number. Call me if you have any questions. That's not a bad idea.
We see that actually frequently.
Well, I push it real hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I push it real hard. If you want to talk to the technician, you ain't going to get him on the phone because we aren't calling him to the front of the shop to do that.
Right.
The shop runs at about $150 an hour, and there's 10 or 12 guys out there, and it's not a good idea to just bring one up and have him start taking calls on the front counter. But the way to talk to it now, the technician has the opportunity to call your cell phone and ask you, does it do it cold or hot, and does it make any difference if the gas tank is full or half or empty when this happens? Those are the kinds of questions that are going to help him fix your car.
And I was trying to keep from coughing.
Okay, all
sorry.
Right. Anyway, that's all right.
Yeah,
and it's. It's a good idea when the technician's calling you, you can answer one of three or four different ways. Yes, no, but don't be afraid of, I don't know. Because you don't want to say yes and send us in that direction. So the answers can be yes, no, or I just don't know.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier when we have the customer involved to diagnose it, and the time you spend with us on the phone or with the technician on the phone is going to come back to you at about $3 a minute. Because it's going to save you a lot of money, because we're going to be able to talk to the person who drives it. Ladies, if you're told to take the truck in to the shop and your husband's the primary driver or the only driver, then give his cell phone number to the shop when you ride it up, because to let them call him, and we always want to do that anyway. So it makes a big difference. There's a couple of good shops in town that I want to tell you about. Harker's is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's a good guy, and he's a good diagnostician. They've been around for a very, very long time. And it's a family-owned business where Ellen, the wife, is at the front counter, and Bob and a nephew is on the is in the shop. And between Bob and what's his name? Is it Eric?
At where?
At Harker's.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Anyway, he's really a good tech. Bob and him are a really good pair to draw to. So that's Harker Automotive, 38th and Indian School. And then you got Thompson's out in Mesa, and they're on Main Street and Stapley just west. And they're really, really a good shop and been around a very long time. And what's important about the shops that I recommend to you is I know them. I know their families. I know they've been in business. I've talked to the parts people because I want a shop that's going to buy 100 parts and only return one or two, and that's because they looked it up wrong, as opposed to let's put this on, hope that didn't fix it, and let's send it back to the parts house. Parts houses know who's using new parts to diagnose cars and which shop does that. And what I don't want is I don't want that part sent to me. Because God only knows if it's been damaged or if it's an alternator and they over amped it or over RPM'd it or whatever. It's just not a part that I want to take out of a box and see that it's been installed. So those are the kinds of things that you can do. Thompson's has been around. Both Brian and Thelma's family has been in the gas station business since the 60s in Mesa. So those young, Brian and Thelma, have been in the gas station business and the car repair business for a very, very long time. So those are a couple of good shops that if you don't have a shop, then may I suggest that you take your car in for an oil change and see how they treat you, see what it's like to talk to them and stuff. There are, back in 1988, when I first started the best car repair shops, there wasn't really a whole bunch of anything, and shortly after that, Angie's List and everybody else in the world came up with referral stuff. Here's the difference between my list of car shops. First of all, you can't buy your way on, and number two is I'm smarter than the average bearers when it comes to complaints about auto repair shops. There's only one shop since 1988 that we asked to resign. And then he actually stepped up and made the customer whole, and we said, fine, we'll keep you. And then he changed hands, and once they change hands, then the shop has to go away for a while because we don't know anything about the owners. So there's a lot of moving parts with respect to...
I think that's an important point, too. The you know, having the same owners for X number of years. What is it, 10?
It's 5 to 10. We need one of the owners on site.
Yes, right.
And so I need to be able to have their cell phone numbers, and we need to be able to talk and stuff like that. And it's no different than when our shop gets a complaint. We lean on some of those other guys.
Mm-hmm.
We had a complaint on a shop not too long ago, and the customer said he fixed an oil leak, but there's no way he fixed the oil leak because the under the side of the car is just dripping with oil. So I took it from shop A, and he didn't want to go back to A anyway, and we sent it to shop B, and I called shop B, and I said, just look this over, see if we may. And what he did was he put a oil filter adapter on a Chrysler, and that's one that... Who makes aftermarket parts? Dorman. Dorman had redesigned it from plastic to metal.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, okay, O-ring problem or something. Shop number two says, Mark, everything's fine. They just didn't clean up the mess.
Yeah.
And so shop number two cleaned up the mess. And then the customer calls back and says, I'm just as happy as can be.
Residual.
Well, shop number two, I think they charged him, but it was a small amount, but they didn't charge me for what they did for me. And that is did they fix the oil leak?
Right.
The answer was yes, shop number two, shop B, fixed the oil leak. They just didn't clean the mess up. So it works that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the customer's happy. Shop number A is happy. Shop B is happy. Shop A owes shop B a favor. And that's kind of the way it works. So my email address, we're going to come back for another hour's worth of callers. If you want to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in probably about 4 or 5 minutes, and we'll take your calls. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. No matter where you're from, you just give us your name and tell us what kind of year, make, and model car you have, and then tell us what the symptoms are. What does it smell like? It pulls to the left. It doesn't start cold. It doesn't start hot. I smell a gas smell, so forth and so on. So that's kind of how it works, is it's give and take. You tell us what's the symptom is that you've identified, and then we get to ask questions about that as well. And we do it on the Internet as well. So mark@marksalem.com is an easy way to do that. And if you'd leave a phone number, I like that because I'm going to want to ask you some questions, and I call from a blocked cell phone. So I tell you that in advance. I tell you, I'm at your email. I'm working on your email, but I'd like to call you, and I'll do that in the next couple of hours, and I'm going to call from a blocked line, and I will identify myself immediately. Hey, you called me. My name's Mark Salem. Can we talk about your car? That's what I say at the very beginning. So anyway, 602-508-0960. That's the call direct here. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, one more time, is 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. He's Alan. I'm Mark. We both have the same last name as Salem, and we'll be back right after this. Well, good morning. Good afternoon. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting next to me he is Alan, my son, and the two of us have north of 60 years of car repair business, and a little different. Alan's into the diesel trucks, the lifting, the lowering, the tires, the wheels, the exhaust, the performance, and I'm kind of more into the maintenance kind of side of, you know, oil changes, tire rotations, and resealing transmission, stuff like that. That'd be fair?
Yes.
Okay, well, let me turn on your microphone so you can talk.
Sorry, I got a buddy text me a clean 7.3.
Oh, a clean another
I,
one.
Yeah, I'm not going to give anyone a head start on my secrets on where we find them. So,
is it an excursion?
No, it's a
truck?
Pickup. Yeah, pickup.
Okay. And folks, what we're talking about is Alan's talking about a 7.3. That's the that was one of the very first motors that Ford came out with on the diesel side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a monster engine. It's now the most. I mean, I guess the
basic.
It's a basic engine, but it's also the most everybody wants one. It's a monster motor.
Well, I don't know about monster. It's just reliable. It's like just a tractor motor. It's just, as we like to call it, it's just seeds and stems. Very simple.
Okay. But it's a V8.
Yeah.
It's
old. It's very primitive. It's cheap to fix. It's reliable.
And what's the year range in the Ford diesels that this 7.3?
On the turbos, oh gosh, you got me there. I think it's 98 and a half. 94 and a half?
Late 90s to?
03.
03.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 5-6 year stread, then they went into the 6 liter.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep.
And the 7.3 is about 1,000 times better than the 6 liter.
Yeah, it doesn't make the power that a 6 liter does, but it doesn't. But it's nice to be able to drive it, and not have it in the shops.
So. otherwise, the 7.3 is the old Chevrolet 283, 327, 350, and this 6 liter is the 348, the 307, stuff like that. It's just a motor that didn't really make Ford proud, and it took us a long time to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it was us. We thought we didn't know anything about diesels, but that 6 liter just drove us crazy, and the guys that have 6 liters then and now know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, on the Dodge side, the 5.9 Cummins was a good motor.
Great
then
motor.
Then they went to a 6.7, which is what I have and what you have in our trucks.
Uh-huh.
And both of those engines have been really good engines
really
with
good.
No big pattern failures.
No.
And then you got the GM diesel, which is the 6.6 liter.
It's always been the same.
It's been as good as it was day one to what it is now.
Yeah, they're just keep adding more emissions crap to all of them, so they're boosting up the power to in exchange for more emissions stuff. But yes, they're good
to keep the exhaust clean. That's
yeah,
what it's
yeah,
really
yeah,
all
yeah,
about
for emissions stuff. Yeah.
Okay. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, so you have a 1 in 5 chance of being able to get on and talk about your car problem. I found this from 1968.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I
is there a date? Did you find a date?
No, but I know when this
oh, okay,
was.
Okay.
This was a test to see if you could get the advanced automotive class at Tempe High School in 1972.
Okay, so you were
This was in 1968.
Okay, so you're 14.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So it's an auto. My mother passed away a long time ago, and I'm going through a big box of stuff that she gave me, and I find this test, and it has a potential of 102 points. I missed, I think, 6 questions, and so I got a 92, and that's an A. Okay. Now, Mr. Elkins was the auto mechanics teacher. Mm-hmm. Later on, you took basic auto mechanics in freshman and sophomore and junior year, but then he took the cream of the crop for the advanced senior year class for the advanced stuff. Then the best technician there won a big set of tools.
I still think it's really interesting that you and I had the same auto shop teacher.
Mr. Painter.
Yeah.
I still call him Mr. Painter.
I know. I think that is one of the coolest things, that we had the same auto shop teacher.
Well, and let me tell you how that goes. In 1968, when I entered Tempe High School, Mr. Elkins had Paul Painter as his student teacher.
Oh,
Paul
was
in college.
Okay.
And Paul was and I still call him Mr. Painter, and he's still a wonderful person,
mm-hmm.
And always has been.
Yeah.
But he would kind of run interference for us young guys with Mr. Elkins, who was a little old, a little crusty, and knew what he was talking
about.
Wasn't
Elkins? He was a customer of ours, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Is he gone now? Has he passed away?
Yes, he's passed away.
Okay,
his family's still here.
Yeah, but he was, or we still have customers of yeah.
We have the Elkins family,
and I know we have his shop sign in the front lobby too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is the test I took, and so I'm gonna tell you. The first question is there's two general types of heat engines, and you have two different types of heat engines. Do you know what they are?
Heat engines?
Yeah. Now keep in mind, this is 30, 40, 50 years ago. Okay, I wrote down internal and external, and he wanted the word to say internal combustion and external.
What is an external combustion?
I don't know. This was 50 years ago. I don't remember what it was in his mind.
That's what popped into my head, but I've never heard that before. Yeah. But okay.
I wrote internal, and he gave me a check mark, and he wrote combustion, so he wanted that. All right, so here he goes. The levels of events on a four-stroke engine. So when they say four-stroke, what does four strokes mean? Go ahead.
That means, well, a revolution of the motor is four strokes of the piston.
Okay.
So the first one is the intake, where it sucks the air and the fuel in.
Okay.
The second one is compression, where it compresses those into a, you know, real high pressure. Spark plug fires, it forces that piston down, which is the power stroke.
Okay.
And then the piston comes back up to push all the exhaust out, which is the exhaust stroke.
Okay, and that's perfect.
Yeah.
The piston starts up high, and it sucks fuel and air in, and then it goes up and compresses everything, and when it gets up to the top and it's taken a beer can and compressed it down to about 10 pieces of paper,
yep.
Then we fire the spark plug. That causes a tremendous explosion that drives the piston down, and now we have to go back up and shove all that crap out and start over again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the four-stroke.
And when they talk about, like, timing and stuff, that's when the spark plug fires in relation to the stroke of the piston and early
all that
and
stuff.
Late and all that stuff.
I got all four of those right. The width or diameter of an engine cylinder is called the...
Hold on. Cubic inches?
The width or diameter of an engine cylinder...
Oh, so...
is called the...
My mind just went blank.
Bore.
Bore, okay.
Okay, how big the hole is.
Okay.
Okay. I got that one right. On the back of this page, figure the total displacement following the engine.
Yeah, I missed that one too.
I want to tell you something. This is what's funny. Okay? I missed it.
Yeah.
And I remember arguing with him about this because it says, the engine is a six-cylinder engine. Bore and stroke are 4 inches by 350. The formula is this. D2 times pi times 5 to the second power.
Yeah, cubic, yeah.
And that's fine. The problem is that I don't know. I'm a freshman in high school. I don't know what that means. And so I said to him, I don't know what the answer is, but I need you to tell me how to do the formula, because I can get one cylinder times all of them.
Yeah, times six or eight.
So the letters top TDC.
Top dead center.
Okay, that's when the piston is up at this highest point.
Mm-hmm.
Will the engine, with an engine with high compression, develop more or less horsepower than the same engine with the other compression? So high compression
more horsepower.
Low. Okay, you're right. One horsepower is defined as an output of what foot-pounds per minute?
Not a clue.
Okay, I wrote 30,000 and it's 33, so I missed that one. And then he goes, what's a dynamometer used for?
Measuring horsepower.
and I wrote measuring compression, and he didn't like that either.
Yeah, that was wrong. Yeah.
And what commonly used four-stroke engines are called? What's used in a four-stroke engine, and what are they called? And the end thing is valves. So what valves?
Oh, intake and exhaust. Is that what
bingo?
You mean?
Okay. Bingo. Okay. And such valves got this name because, and I wrote down, they inhale air and they exhale exhaust. And he put a smiley kind of a face there.
Yeah.
A hydraulic lifter is operated by what under pressure?
Oil.
Okay. To go on, it's just all kinds of fun stuff that goes back. And my mother kept this because she said this was the beginning of you being the car guy.
Yep.
The purpose of the valve is to empty the cylinder.
Fill or empty.
You're right.
Fill it with air and fuel and empty it of exhaust.
And so he really should have said what valve.
Yeah.
The purpose of the exhaust valve is, or of the intake valve, but he didn't. And the rings are used to make a seal between the piston and the cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
I got that one right. Then he talks about the four strokes. Now, in the old days, I thought that they were suck, squeeze, explosion, and exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
And there was four names. I don't remember what it was, but there was four names that talked about, you know, a four-stroke engine. And I got all those right, and I was pretty proud of that because that was... this test is the one that allowed me to get into the advanced class in 1972 at Tempe High School.
Yeah.
And so then he has an exploded motor, and he wants to know what you have to write down, point to the spark plug, the cylinder head, the valves, the camshaft, the gaskets, the pistons, the rods, the bearings, the flywheel, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, just kind of a test from a long time ago.
We had so much fun with Mr. Painter in Auto Shop. Oh my gosh! I'll tell you what,
Mr. Painter was Mr. Painter was could have been what 5 foot. Three, 5 foot four.
Yeah, at the most.
And he's been he taught me and he taught you.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And he said I was better student than you were.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was talking about honoriness or knowledge, but now Mr. Painter is a guy that him and Ben Elkins are directly responsible for me from where I'm at today. Those two guys took me my junior year and my senior year. In auto mechanics, and I was going to quit school if they didn't get me auto mechanics, and so my mother went down and somehow talked to principal into getting me into auto mechanics my junior year, and then senior year I got into the advanced class, and then from there, you know, everything else kind of fell into place. So this test just kind of started.
Let's break first, and then we'll grab a caller on the other
side.
Okay,
and the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Excuse me. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We've got some callers, and we're going to get to those. But real quick, let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. He's down there on Washington and 40th Street. He's been around for 20, 30, 40 years. And he has morphed from the two-speed old automatic transmissions to the new electronic 6-speed, 7-speed, 8-speed transmissions where the computer shifts based on speed and how many people are in the car and what the road surface is at. So if you need a transmission shop, they're happy to take you a drive with you if you can show them the problem that you want fixed. Just call them and make an appointment, and then they'll take a ride with you. They're very good at that. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange, ATE. First, we're going to do the lady who called in, and lady called in and said, if I'm in my car with the windows up and someone tries to hijack me,
carjack. We're not in a plane.
Okay, hijack. Okay. Calm down.
Sorry. Hijack.
Hijack my car or hijack.
Carjack.
If I shoot him, will the bullet bounce back in the car?
If the window's up.
If the window's up.
If you shoot through the window.
Yeah. and if you, if the gun you have has gunpowder,
yeah,
there's no question it's going to go through the window and put the hurt on him. And if your life is in danger, I know that we have told our daughters that if you're in that situation, shoot twice, because you might miss on the first one, then the second one is a good chance. So just shoot twice. And if the guy's standing there and he's got a gun and he's going to hijack and you decide you want to shoot him first, I'm just telling you, don't pull the trigger and then let the smoke clear to find out that he's still standing there. Just to pull the trigger twice. All right, Harold, or no, Harry. Harry's first. Harry, how can we help you?
Fine. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good. We're good. Thank you.
Hey, I got a question. It's an oil question. I never realized that oil has a shelf life.
I don't know that it does.
Hey, I'm going to give you a quick story here. I used to have a diesel oil. I've had one for about 70. And I had some oil left over. Quite a bit, in fact. I had like about 10 gallons of Shell Rotella. And my son was down from Idaho, and he has a kind of a unique vehicle. He has a 1991 Toyota van that's a diesel, 3-liter four-cylinder non-turbo diesel.
Okay, okay.
That oil from Japan, okay. So I told him, well, I got this oil, you know, it should be okay to use in your vehicle. So he takes and looks at the jugs, and there's a number on the jug and everything, and gets on the internet and, you know, queries it and everything, and, you know, gave the date of manufacture. And it's pretty old. It was almost 20 years old, some of it. And he said, well, you know, I said, well, what's the deal? And he says, well, they gave the deal. It said that oil, regular oil, not synthetic, 5-year shelf life, and the synthetic has like 5 to 7 years.
Okay, all right, Harry, I got to deal with this right now. I don't believe that oil has a shelf life. I do believe that some of the 30 weight oil that we poured in the 50s and 60s cars is not applicable to anything new. But I've never heard, nor do I believe, and I don't care who says it. I've been trained in oil expertise by both Valvoline and Chevron. I've never heard anybody say that oil had a shelf life. And I don't know why it would have a shelf life, because there's no moisture issues, there's no heat issues, there's no cold issues, there's nothing. And much of the oil that we have today could have been made 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So I don't want people to have, we're having a conversation, but I don't want them to think that they can't have, you know, a quart of 30 weight in their garage for their lawnmowers, because there is no shelf life to an oil. If it's an applicable weight for the applicable application, for the application you're going to use it for, then you can do it 20 years later and you'll be fine. And as far as synthetics are concerned, that's just craziness for synthetics. I think it's somebody creating their own rules so that they can sell more oil. That's what I think. So I got to run. Harry, thank you for bringing that up. But no, I do not believe that oil has a shelf life. Harold, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, guys. I'd like to talk about all electric vehicles for a minute. As you know, virtually every manufacturer is going to have an all-electric vehicle out in the market. In fact, I just saw an advertisement last night that Hyundai has an all-electric called the Ioniq coming on the market.
We're familiar.
I have two questions related to these all-electric vehicles.
Okay.
The first one is, do they all operate at a standard voltage? And question number two is, President Biden is spending $1 billion to build charging stations all over the country. Are these charging stations and their cords and all, is that like a universal plug that'll fit every vehicle, or do you have to have like adapters or something to use them? Thank you.
It's too new it's difficult to answer your question. As far as the voltage is concerned, I'm not familiar with whether they have different voltages or not, but apparently it's from car to car. As far as charging the car is concerned, up in Payson, where I hang out a lot, there, right next to the subway, there's a bunch of charging stations, and I see a variety of electrical cars there. So there must be some adapter or something on the menu for the charging station for you to tell it. Now, I think it's more likely that when you plug your car in, that the charging station then knows what car you have, what electrical car you have, what the voltage is, and what the percentage of battery power you have still, or that you can, that it can inflate. But that is not a problem right now with the three or four or five different brands of electric cars that are out there. It's not a problem with charging stations. They apparently have adapters or have a way where they're going kind of universal with respect to the plug. So I don't, but I'll tell you what though, if I'm wrong, someone will call in at 602-508-0960 and they'll square it away, and I'll admit I didn't know what I was talking about, although I think I'm right, and we'll pass it on. But that's a good question. I don't know enough.
I haven't been around them enough. We don't see enough of them in the shop to know the answer to that.
But if I was making an electric car, I'd certainly make sure that it used a power station that the other cars used. So the what's the General Motors electric car, or the Tesla, or the there's just some of the other electric cars. They're going to share the same infrastructure. It doesn't make sense that you're going to have to hunt down something just for a Chevrolet or a Hyundai.
Yeah.
Anyway, good luck. And if anybody calls in, I'll make sure I say something and clean up the mess I may have made. Matt, you're up next.
Hey guys, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2013 Sierra with a 5.3 liter V8 in it, and I've recently, in the last year, kind of been experiencing some lower oil pressure issues. So I'm on the second oil sending unit, and with a little of the Google research I've been able to do, it sounds like it may be the sump tube or the O-ring around it.
Yep.
But I'm not having any knocking or negative sounds. I am getting a little bit of a weird, not quite a vibration, but just a different noise when the active fuel management kicks in, and most of my driving is I-10 outside of the valley.
Both could be the issue. We do a lot of the oil pump pickup O-rings. Basically, the O-rings go bad, and it starts sucking air. That will cause a lack of oil pressure. But if you have the active fuel management, you've already got a bigger problem on your hands anyways.
That's what I've started learning. And I'm at 85,000 miles.
Yeah, I've seen them as early as 60. I've seen them as late as 200, 225. But it's going to be one of those two things. It's hard to say which one.
And here's what I'm going to guess out loud. How the oil level is clearly below the O-ring.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we just overfill the crankcase by 2 or 3 quarts of oil and go drive it, and let's cover that O-ring that's failed, and if we raise the oil level up and the problem goes away, and then we drop the oil level down and the problem comes back, then it has to be the O-ring.
Yeah, certainly.
And so you could do something like that if you wanted to test it yourself. Don't go crazy. I'd go 1 quart at a time, but I probably, how many quarts does your 5.3 hold? Five?
Six.
Six?
And I did try that. I think that I'm also getting the screen around the sending unit is something I'm suspect of, because the first sending unit replacement lasted about 9 to 12 months.
I'm up against a break. Hold your thought. Okay, hold your thought, because we're going to be back in just a few minutes right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We're talking to Matt, and Matt's got a 13 Sierra that's got a 5.3 V8, and he's got an oil leak issue or an oil pressure problem. Matt, we were a little concerned about this. You said there was a screen on the oil pressure switch or on the oil pressure regulator. What is it?
So the oil sending unit, the sensor at the top in the back of the motor, has a small screen filter that goes with it when you replace it, I'm just kind of curious as to, with that many miles, and there's been maybe times in the life of the truck, I'm the only owner that I haven't maybe been the best on the timeline of oil changes, about sludge maybe around in the engine or deposits.
Okay, let me address that real quick for you. You change your question, and we process a hell of a lot of cars a year. And this is something I don't ever remember seeing a work order that said that we had a plugged oil pressure switch or a screen or anything. I've never seen that.
Yeah.
Never.
Okay.
Now, it is true the pickup assembly sits at the bottom of the pan, and every once in a while you'll get a bunch of mud in there, and that causes an oil starvation problem across the board. But as far as the one at the oil pressure switch, I've never seen an oil pressure switch with a screen in it, although I've never looked in the bottom end of it either.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's it. You've got an oil pressure switch on. Why don't you just take the oil pressure switch off? Why don't you go rent one of those pressure gauges and screw it right into the back of the engine and start monitoring the oil pressure yourself?
We need to find out if it's actually low oil pressure or if it's a false reading. That's the first thing. We need to find out if it's really low. The only way to do that would be a manual gauge. And then at that point, then we can figure out, okay, it is really low, so we know it's not the sender. At that point, we start looking at the under the intake, the active fuel management, yeah. Whatever, the V-loam or the O-ring.
And that's the first thing, though. You got to see, do we really have an oil pressure problem or not? And then go from there. Is that all right? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you very much. I want to clean up something with Harold. Harold talked about, it was Harry that talked about shelf life. Okay, during the break, you, like every other youngster in the world, went on the internet, and I told you I didn't want to hear nothing out of your mouth unless it came from Shell or Chevron or Mobil. Okay. Let me just do a synopsis. The majority of them say that their oil has a shelf life of between 3, 4, and 5 years.
Five to ten-ish, yes.
Five to ten-ish, okay?
Yeah.
And let me tell you why I think that's a craziness for shelf life. First of all, if you have a non-detergent oil that's from the 70s, the can is going to tell you that it's from the 70s. That's probably not an oil that you want to put in your new car. But if we can just get past the shelf life thing, I don't understand why an oil is going to lose any of its ability. But its ability to do a 57 Chevy versus a Maserati are two different things.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's using that we're going to use an oil that was never designed to run in a Maserati. That's a far way away from a shelf life issue.
Right.
And I want to draw the line between the shelf life and using an oil that was made for the cars in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. But backwards compatible, when you go to Barrett Jackson, they got all these old cars there. They don't even have oil that car was normally came with because those oils are all gone.
I guess the real question is if the exact oil that you and I put in our truck, if it had been around for 15 years and we found a 10-year-old bottle that was still sealed, you know, inside of our building, would we put it in the truck? And I would say yes. I would put it in my truck.
And I'll polish that a little bit more. Everything's backwards compatible.
Yeah.
When you got a 020 synthetic on this today,
yes.
It's backward compatible to every synthetic everywhere down the line. Every oil is backward compatible. And so we'll get past that. Let's go to Kip. Kip, you're next. How can I help you?
Hi, I have a 1955 Austin Healey BN1, and I'm having trouble getting brakes shoes that are relined. I can't get them from any of the normal suppliers anymore. The early models have a different size than the later models. It splits in the middle of 1955. Is there any place in Phoenix where I can take my shoes, have the what's left of this lining unbonded and something new bonded onto them?
I don't know the answer to that. You're asking me a question I've never heard before. But I think here's what I want you to do. I'm willing to help you, okay? So I want you to write down my email address, mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K. At MarkSalem, like the cigarette.com. And I will call a couple of old time guys here in the valley and find out if any of these clutch guys or anybody can put new shoes on yours. The second thing I want you to do is I want you to send me the specifics of the cars, because we have a parts department that Jeff and Sean, they can find hubcaps for Jesus Christ Hurst, okay? These guys can find stuff that nobody else can find, but I need all the data on your car.
And even some pictures.
And we will do our best to see if we can find a pair of shoes for you.
Because I can promise you, if that car was sitting on my rack right here and it was tying up my rack, Jeff would find us some shoes for it. I promise you that. Promise you.
But we will help you. Mark@marksalem.com. And this is because it's a 55. I mean, this car, I was 1 year old when this car was made. This is a long time ago.
I have no idea even what the car looks like.
But, Kip, I'll help you. If you'll let me help you, just give me all the information. Give me the VIN number, and you can leave off the last three or four
digits.
Eddie
just texted me as we're sitting here, and he said maybe Arizona Brake and Clutch.
Okay, good.
I don't know who that is, but...
I do know them, okay. And I was in my mind, but I didn't want to. Arizona Brake and Clutch might be somebody you want to talk to. Arizona Brake and Clutch.
I've dealt with them in the past.
Okay.
Okay.
But if you want us to try, I'm happy to have our parts department spend 15, 20, 30 minutes making some calls and seeing if they can find shoes for you. And if we get the shoes, if you promise never to tell anybody this again, I'll give them to you at what we paid for them. I don't do that very often, but I understand the dilemma you're in. Okay? All right. I got to run, Kip. Thank you very much. Jim, you stay there because you're next. We'll be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you real quick about a couple of shops. You got Kurtz at I-17 in Bell. Kurtz has been around a long time. I know Kurtz really, really well. They run a really good shop. They're not in that upsell, sell you everything in the world, bring you in for a cheap oil change, and then to tell you that you're due for $4,000 worth of work. That's just not them. But they are great diagnosticians. They're a great family operation. I-17 in Bell, northeast corner. On the other side of town, Auto Dynamics is in Sun City. People say to me, in Sun City or in Fountain Hills or in Tempe, give me the name of a good shop. Well, if you're in the Sun City area, Automotive Dynamics is the shop I'm going to send you to. I know Chuck, and I've known him since 1968. We've been friends for a long time. And you get to know your friends, and you know that Chuck knows right from wrong. So if you're in the Sun City area and you don't have a repair shop, may I suggest that you go in for an oil change or a tire rotation or something simple and see how you're treated at Auto Dynamics. Jim, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I appreciate taking my call. My daughter has a 2001 Toyota Corolla LE, little four-door second owner, and it had an aftermarket alarm system in it for years. Her mother had the car, and about 2 months ago I had it removed at a shop. They gave me the alarm and all the components, charged me 2 hours of labor, and the car ran fine. About 3 weeks ago, I went out to start it, and it turns over like crazy, but it doesn't want to catch. It just turns over, turns over, turns over.
Okay.
Could a fuel pump just completely go bad, or what? Any idea what could cause a car running normally to just stop?
Yeah,
it's something they did
all the time.
Yeah, this is something that we deal with 2-3 times a day, and it's real simple. It's one of three things. It's the lack of spark, so it could be a crankshaft sensor, a camshaft sensor. It can be an ignition module. It can be the lack of fuel, which is a fuel pump or a fuel filter or a fuel pressure regulator, or it can have a plastic or a rubber timing belt on it, and we blew the timing belt off of it. And it cranks over, but it's not synchronized anymore. So it's either going to be spark, fuel, or timing. And you won't know if it's related to the alarm or not take off and do away with it until you figure it out. But to be perfectly honest with you, this is just a no big deal. Your car might as well be a Fred Flintstone car to us. Because it's, I mean, I don't mean to be derogatory.
No.
It's just that that technology is just so simple. So if you wanted to do it, this is what you would do. You'd go out there and you'd take some, do you have a propane tank in your garage?
I don't.
Okay, well, go get a can of carb spray. Take the air cleaner off and go about 4 seconds right down the throat of the carburetor or the air intake. Mm-hmm. Then hit the key, and if it fires up and runs for a second and dies, then we got a fuel delivery problem. On the other hand, are you married?
No, have been a few times, but no.
Okay. Well, get one of your neighbors to come over and pull a spark plug wire off and stick a screwdriver in the spark plug wire and have him hold on to the screwdriver and put his hand on the fender. Then you just tap the key, and if he uses bad words, then you have spark.
It's likely not related to the alarm system. If we remove an alarm system, if it's not going to start, it's not going to start right then.
Right then. I agree with you.
Yeah, it typically won't last you know, a couple weeks or whatever it was.
Another thing on the old Corolla is that sometimes what will happen is you can take the oil cap off and you can look inside and look at the camshaft rotate when it's cranking. And if the belt's off of it, the crankshaft, the cranking of the starters will be nice and smooth, but the camshaft will move in spurts because the teeth are all chewed off the timing belt.
I'm thinking that that's possible, but it's probably not likely because it sounds like it was sitting. It was parked there. A timing belt typically wouldn't break while it was sitting, so it's probably a spark or a fuel issue.
You're right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quickly, I've got an appointment Tuesday, and they're going to charge me, you know, 1 hour labor to find out what it is, which is fine. They should be able to find that what's wrong with it in an hour, correct?
No question.
Well, I would think so, but I don't like the idea. See, we're not allowed to use that kind of vernacular. 1 hour doesn't mean anything because what's their labor rate? Is it 90 or 160?
125.
Okay. So that's what's important is the 125. Right. And then it's also important that most all of us are going to overbid a diagnosis.
Okay.
But there's a lot of us old gold gray-haired guys that recognize the benefit of coming in under there to be a hero. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You leave a little money on the table, and people notice that. And so there's a lot of us old guys that overbid stuff only to come in under so that we can just say, hey, we left some money on the table. Because when 2 years later, the dad gets mad at us and said, you guys been ripping us off, I pull up things and I go, wait a minute, I'm adding up, and I go, you know what, between the estimates and the total amount, I've left $217.25 on the table, and you're saying I rip you off? And that's kind of how it is. But I think Alan's right. I don't think you're going to have a problem with it's going to be spark or fuel, and it's not likely to be the timing belt. But Alan, it's an 01.
Yeah.
And God knows when the last time it had a belt on it. Yeah. So anyway, that's where we go, okay?
All right. You guys are the best. Thanks. Right.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. In our shop and many other shops in the Valley, of friends of mine, it's a sin to be a penny over the estimate.
Yeah.
We know the difference. So we take the hard parts and the labor, and then we take 10% sales tax and shop supplies and environmental service, and then we'll add $10, $20, $30 to that estimate because we don't want to call you back for a set of wiper blades. We don't want to call you back because we need another gasket or we need a new oil cap. We don't want to call you back. So we just overestimate it by $20, $30, $40, and then at the end of the day, you come in and we're cheaper than we told you, and you feel good, and we're fine with that, too. Most of us old gray-haired guys do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice way to treat your customers, but it also turns around. So if the customer, like the example I just gave, I had one not too long ago. I said to him, in the last 2 years, I've left more than $200 on the table between what you okayed and what the bill was really at. So you can't say I'm ripping you off, or I would have scooped that $200 up. But he got a little crappy with me, and I said, you know what, you need to find a new garage anyway, because I'm kind of done with you.
Yeah.
So anyway, 602-508-0960. We've got a few minutes left in the show. We've got about 7 minutes, so if you want to give us a call, you can get in right now. There's nobody on the line. 602-508-0960. One of the things that you want to be careful of, both ladies and gentlemen, is who you talk about in front of the shop. So if you say, my dad in Vermont said he wants you to do this, that raises a real red flag problem, because if dad in Vermont, if the test that he wants us to run comes out and it doesn't tell us anything, or it perhaps doesn't identify the problem, then he's going to say we didn't do it right and we're going to be in a pickle. So the diagnostic process should be the shop's diagnostic process, and it's okay for you to ask about that. But I think today we've talked about that. How many times you got a car that cranks over but doesn't catch, doesn't start? Well, that's almost always it's fuel or spark. And so we're missing fuel and spark, or in an extended way, it could be a timing belt or a timing chain.
Yeah.
And so those are the kinds of things. And the diagnostic part of that is typically not – most everybody's going to use a 1 hour, $125 to $155, $160, $160 an hour as a diagnostic thing. but most of us don't eat all that up. Most of us will be able to figure it out, and we're being fair and faithful to our customers and say, hey, it was only a 42-minute or a 40-minute or whatever, whatever. So there are times that that the shop is, and that's the name of a shop. If you go in five times and they tell you it's going to be X amount of dollars, and every time you go in, the diagnostic charge is there, that would be something that if my shop did that, I'd be very unhappy. Be very, very unhappy, because that's just not the way the odds are going to play out. You're going to lose your butt on a couple of diagnostics, but you're going to gain on the others, and you might as well just leave that table on the ground, or leave that money on the table. Okay, who's next?
Say hello to Scott.
Scott, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
I've got a 2004 Buick Century that I've got a code for the O2 sensor after the catalytic converter. And what my question is, do you know of a shop on the west side of town that can diagnose that for me?
Yes. Yeah. 38th Avenue and Indian School, 25th Street and no, 35th Avenue, 38th Avenue and Indian School, or okay. 25th and where's Billy? It's 25th and Indian School. So 25th Street and Indian School and 38th and Indian School. There's two shops, 25th Street Auto and Harker's.
Okay. I live on 303 and Camelback, so S&S Tire in Avondale, evidently, they're no longer one of your shops, I take it.
No, the family, we all grew up together, but yes, S&S just sold their facilities. Okay. Their tire stops and stuff, so they're no longer on our list because we don't take chains. Let me look. Harker's, 25th Street.
That's the furthest west we have, though.
That's right. Yeah. That 38th Avenue is the furthest west we have.
Okay.
I'm
303
sorry.
And what?
Camelback.
Oh, pretty far south.
Yeah, you're going to...
I'm way out here on the west side.
Yeah.
You know what? Isn't there a Fletcher's? Remember Tom Fletcher? I mean, he's still around.
I don't know.
He had a shop out there on the west side in Surprise, but he's not there anymore, and he sold it, so he's not on the list either. But if he was still running it, then I'd send it to you whether he's on the list or not, because he's a good guy. But now, the other thing you can do, this is an easy way if you want to try this, Scott, call up a couple of auto parts or stop by and find the gray-haired grizzly guy and just say to him, give me the name of a shop that pays their bills, that doesn't order a part, try it, it doesn't work, and they return it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and they call and they order the specific part, and then they never return it, means their diagnosis was correct. So tell me the name of a shop, a couple of the shops that do all of that. And those guys, those grizzly guys at the parts counter, they can tell you who the shops are that pay their bills, that don't guess with the parts, because that happens a lot, and it happens more to the retail auto parts stores, where somebody will say it's a mass airflow sensor and then they'll bring it back and say it's defective, I just want my money back. Well, what they're saying is I tried it and it didn't make my car start, but I got to come up with a reason why you got to give me my money back.
right, that makes sense.
But anyway,
yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Good enough, Scott. And you know, the O2 sensor, that's not that hard. You make it run rich and you see the O2 sensor better have a high number. You make it run lean. You open up a vacuum line and see what it is. But it's also, he said, it's post-CAT.
Yeah, and I was actually going to ask him, we were just out of time, but I was going to ask him what the exact definition is, because we're seeing a lot now of efficiency, which
okay.
is usually a bad CAT.
But this is an O4. This is an 04 Buick. I'm not quite sure that we go back to where we're really going to have an efficiency car.
Oh, yeah, probably
and,
not.
And an 04 that's
it's
almost,
probably gonna
almost
be a Richard
18
Lean.
Years old. Yeah,
yeah,
it's going to be a Richard yeah. Lean. So the catalytic converter, what goes into the catalytic converter is laden with extra fuel, hydrocarbons. And what comes out the back should be dramatically less, because the catalytic converter is like a giant furnace. It's red hot inside. So as the fuel comes into the catalytic converter, we consume it and we turn it into carbon dioxide and water. And so where the efficiency of the catalytic converter is, what did it go, what's the number of what it went in, and what's the number when it came out, and under the best of conditions, we're going to see CO and hydrocarbons go away. They're going to both drop as it goes through the catalytic converter, and the NOx as well. So anyway, mark@marksalem.com is my email address. If you have a question, you're welcome to send me an email. And I'll, if you'll give me a phone number, I'll call you, and it'll be from a blocked line, and I'll tell you that it's Mark Salem. I'm returning your call and asking your car questions so that you don't hang up on me. Anyway, that's the easiest way for me to do it, and a lot of times you're just not going to give me the information I need, so I'm going to ask you. Alan, thanks for spending your Saturday here with me.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
Happy anniversary, by the way.
Oh.
48 years.
With you. Seriously? Who's that? Who are you wishing anniversary to?
We had a big week this week. Smartest guy I know had a birthday. And then Mom and you guys' anniversary, so happy anniversary.
Yeah, 48 years. I don't know what that says about her knowing right from wrong, but then again, it's 48 years. Anyway, mark@marksalem.com, and then our website is obviously marksalem.com. It's got plenty of FAQs there that have been asked and answered 1,000 times, so you're always welcome to go there as well, and that's marksalem.com. We'll see you next Saturday. Wear your seatbelt, drive safely. God bless you.